Thanks to our listeners, Issues Etc. has operated independently and in the black for 10 consecutive years. With 3 weeks left in 2018, we're $77,000 short of projected expenses. Please make a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. There are things that sound like a really, really good idea until you sit down and actually figure out what it's going to cost, either in terms of dollars and cents or in terms of, well, things that are less tangible, things that are less able to put into the columns of profits and losses. One of those things may well be federal paid leave. Everybody likes the idea until you actually see the figures. We'll talk about some of that, the cost and the support for women's federal paid leave. Joy Pullman joins us on this Thursday afternoon. She's managing editor of The Federalist and author of the book The Education Invasion and a recent column titled Once Informed of Cost to Women and Taxpayers, Support for Federal Paid Leave Plummets. Joy, welcome back.
Hi.
What kind of cautionary lessons can the U.S. learn from other countries that have adopted taxpayer-funded leave for women?
I'm just going to read you kind of a bit on that point from this Cato Institute report that accompanies the poll we're talking about. It says, studies have found that government-provided paid leave may lead to fewer women getting promoted and becoming managers because they take longer leaves than they otherwise would. And other studies have noted that employers, especially smaller companies, have difficulty accommodating workers taking leave, and they may be less willing to hire female employees to begin with. So basically, discrimination against women in hiring, as well as harder for women to reach higher levels of management. And we see, if you look at comparisons between the United States and Europe and other parts of the world, the United States leads on both of these fronts. And, of course, there's lots of other factors here, but one of the reasons is that basically, you know, people hire women on an equal basis to men more in the United States than they do in other countries.
Okay. One of the things I was stunned to discover was that there are countries where they started out with what we're talking about here in the United States, some weeks of federal paid leave or maybe some months of federal paid leave. And, for instance, in the case of Sweden, it's now ballooned to over a year of taxpayer-funded leave.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, I fully support mothers spending time with their infants. That's a wonderful thing. But really, that, you know, that is a family and a community concern. You know, the child belongs to the family that had the child, you know, and workers don't employ employees to not work for them. They pay them to produce work. And so obviously, when a mother is spending a year with her baby, she's not producing paid work for a company, you know, and it's very difficult to ask a company to pay for someone for an entire year for not producing any work for them that they can turn around, obviously, and market to people and earn income from. So in other countries like Europe, of course, they require taxpayers to fill in that, but all that does is just kind of spread those costs around in such a way that has a similar effect. It's just harder to pinpoint, you know, the specific company. It's a national thing.
So what are you to do? Because my impulse is, on the very face of it, to say, you know, maybe this is an idea we might look into because it's a good idea for women, especially in those first years of the child's life, to be the mother, to be with the children. I'm thoroughly convinced of that, not only by experience, but also by just the wisdom of the thing. This is how those things were made to work. But,
oh, you're absolutely right. You know, all the research, I mean, so one of my focuses is early childhood research because I'm a mother of small children, so I have a personal interest. And all of it, you know, says that that face time, that bonding time with mother, the more of it that you can get, the better. So I strongly support mothers doing that. So, I mean, the question here for me isn't, should mothers be with their babies? Absolutely they should be. But rather the question is, you know, basically who should be on the hook to provide that environment for the mother and the child, for the baby to grow and get the best start in life. What we often do is take responsibilities from the people who actually own that responsibility and spread it around to other people in ways that I think are completely unfair. So I don't think it's unfair to ask other mommies and daddies and other taxpayers and other people who did not have a certain baby. They didn't have sex, which makes a baby. You know, they didn't create this human being. They didn't promise implicitly, you know, to provide for and nurture this human being. You know, that's not their baby. So I shouldn't be paying for other people's babies. I should be paying for my own baby. So, of course, there's other ways, you know, to kind of go down the cascade ladder in instances where there's problems. But, you know, the people who made the baby should be taking care of the baby. And, of course, grandparents step in to help, churches step in to help, families and neighbors. But always the people closest to the child are, you know, the ones who love him and know him the best in the family. And they're going to be providing the absolute best care, you know, for mommy and baby together. So daddy should be, you know, the ones on the hook to pay for their wives and children. You know, other people who didn't make that child, it's not fair to ask us to do that when we have other obligations to things like our own children.
What do we know based upon the survey you mentioned before about support for federal paid leave for women and its relationship to a knowledge of its costs?
Well, basically, the big thing I thought was a takeaway throughout the survey, because I've been hearing, you know, I'm on the Republican conservative side of things, we just need to cave on paid leave. It's so broadly supported. Just, you know, give up the ghost and hope you have a hand in designing it so it's not a terrible, horrible welfare entitlement program is kind of the line I've been fed from, you know, women's advocacy groups on the right. So I think this poll really explodes that idea, because if you say to Americans, you know, in the poll, hey, you know, what do you think about just, you know, giving people a new entitlement? You know, let moms have, you know, taxpayers pay for 12 weeks of paid leave. 74% of them support it. So there you go. It looks like big support. But then when you say to them basically, well, are you willing to pay the costs of providing this to someone, the number is completely flipped. So, for example, if you say, if we cut existing entitlements, these are our biggest things that we spend out of the federal treasury every single year, is Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. So if you say, okay, so if we to offset this new entitlement, you know, maybe we should rein in some of our other entitlements that we already know are bloated and are bankrupting the country, the support completely, you know, flips to 70%, 6% opposition to it. So, and then there's a variety of other things that the poll tested. You know, if we had to pay for it in tax increases, people still oppose paying for this leave through tax increases. They oppose it if, you know, if it hurts women in the workforce, if it makes them less likely to become managers or, you know, to get ahead in their careers. So basically, if you just say to them, it's kind of like saying, would you like, you know, an ice cream cone? Would you like to give ice cream cones to people? Absolutely. Ice cream is great. You know, hand it all out. But, you know, but then if you say, well, do you want to pay to hand out ice cream cones to everybody? Or do you want to make other people pay for that? Then people start saying, well, I'm not sure that's really fair. I don't know if I can afford it. All the other, you know, obvious things that go into the logistics of actually providing an entitlement. So the bottom line is, you know, basically that support evaporates when you require people to actually do what it takes to provide that kind of a program.
What do we know about women? What women are already doing absent federal paid leave to juggle these very important priorities for them, that they do want to be home with their children, and in many cases they do need to work? What do we know about what they're already doing?
Well, it completely varies by the family and by the income level, but there actually are, I think there is something like 40 different kinds of federal, and that doesn't even include all the state, there's 40 different kinds at least of federal child care kinds of programs, mixes of tax credits, of outright entitlements and welfare programs, you know, for people that are based on child care sorts of things. So there's already an array of things that are in existence to you know, that require taxpayers to pay for other people's children's upbringing. And in the states, of course, as well as at the federal level, have preschool programs, and some of them do relate to birth, depending on how needy the family is. But, you know, wealthier, you know, mothers and families have the money, and it's really kind of a gamut. But when you ask women what they're really wanting out of, you know, the child care experience, most mothers would rather stay with their children, particularly with it when they're small. And also mothers of smaller children very overwhelmingly want part-time and flexible and work-from-home kinds of opportunities. And those are extremely hard to find, and the women who get them, like me, we're very lucky. You know, women are always, and moms are always asking, you know, how do you do that? How did you manage this? You know, because they want, you know, the opportunity to kind of do a little bit here and there during nap time, maybe when, you know, the kids are sleeping or at grandma's house for the afternoon, or, you know, to have, you know, a babysitter come by a couple of afternoons a week. Moms really like that arrangement a lot more than having to, you know, to be at work all day long, 8 to 5, 8 to 6 every single day, and have their kids, you know, being cared for by essentially by strangers during all of that time. So moms are really hungry for a lot more personal and flexible and tailored to their family life kind of work and childcare arrangements. And there's very limited opportunities for that, largely because of government regulations.
So often we hear from, say, the left politically that this is a choice between federally funded daycare or federally funded mother's leave. Those are your only two choices. It sounds like you're saying women are smarter than that.
Right. Well, and also, you know, it's the all or nothing approach really isn't a good fit for women because we, you know, do a lot of piecemeal things. If you just looked, you know, at my daily schedule, you know, it's an hour doing this, 2 hours doing that, you know, switching off, you know, the kids are going to be with, you know, my friends on this morning usually, you know, or and they're at home with me and, you know, this time in the afternoons. You know, so we have what they call spaghetti brain, right? So we can manage that sort of thing, some of us, really well, and we like to do that, right? Some ladies don't. They prefer a simpler life. That's great. More power to them. But women, you know, tend to be more creative, and our life situations are different. So we're really good at saying, you know, I have a different and unique situation, and I have, you know, a need for my kids in this, in terms of this. I have a skills and abilities for the workplace in terms of this. And what would really be ideal if there were more opportunities for women to kind of fit those puzzle pieces together between them and their employer in a way that suits both of them, rather than have to juggle with all these kinds of, you know, tax laws, daycare regulations, tax regulations, you know, the cost of hiring workers are extremely high, so on and so forth. So there's so much in the way from getting, you know, moms and their employers in a room together and just letting them, you know, manage their own business by themselves.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled, Once Informed of Costs to Women and Taxpayers, Support for Federal Paid Leave Plummets. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you again.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, we're going to talk a little bit about a sex change ritual in the Church of England. It's being proposed there in Anglicanism that a confirmation or a reaffirmation of baptism ritual be adopted for transgender people so that they can have their new identity and their new gender, so to speak, affirmed by the church. We'll talk with Bishop Keith Ackerman about it right after this.
Suppose that the supernatural is like the treasure buried on an island. A map shows all the possible places it may be.
Dr. Angus Manoj, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Well, scientism declares that scientific investigation is the only or best way to discover the treasure. But then methodological naturalism says some parts of the island are off limits. We can't search where the map warns, here there be dragons, for that means the supernatural. Does anyone think this shows the treasure isn't there? The fact that some scientists don't want to look for answers in supernatural places is no reason to think that the answers are never there.
You can listen to Dr. Manoj's presentation, Making the Case Against Scientism, on a recording of the 2018 Making the Case Conferences. We'll send it to you for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.